Hello, everyone. This is Ashley Pfeiffer.
And Ariel Brooke Stevens.
And you're listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. We're coming to you on Reggae Rocks Kendall County, and we will be with you on the first Saturday of every month from 9 to 10. If you've missed an episode and you can't sleep at night because of what you possibly missed out on, you can always go back and listen to any of our podcasts on the Reggae Rocks app. All the podcasts that we have done are on there.
And you can also reach out to us at the Closing Table on Facebook. Feel free to send us a message if there's something that you would like us to cover, or if there's something that we have covered that prompts some questions. We're happy to get back to you on anything.
Yeah, we feel like there's a million topics to cover, but if they're not the topics that y'all want to hear, that really doesn't do anybody any good. So please feel free to reach out with us.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, neither of us are attorneys. So
financial advisors,
no,
lenders.
We're
not any of those things. I work for a title company.
So I am a real estate broker. Mm-hmm. Don't kill the messenger. We are bringing topics to you that we face from month to month. Some of the bigger topics that we know people aren't necessarily aware of that do affect real estate transactions. We're really just trying to arm you with information, either to prompt questions or to help you get through what you've got going on right now.
Exactly. And so really and truly, when we talk about, okay, what are we going to talk about on the podcast? It's whatever we are dealing with, the questions that we've had, you know, because we are firm believers in you don't know what questions to ask if you don't really know what answers you're going to get, right? You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so that's why we've started this, is because I feel like people, you know, this is such a stressful event, whether you're buying, selling, refinancing. You know, they say it's death, divorce, and buying and selling a home are the top three biggest stressors.
Yes.
And when you try to combine all of that into one transaction, or, you know,
Sometimes they do.
And sometimes, yes, yes, yes.
Well, and I find too that a lot of times I'm faced with things, you know, even after however many years I've been in the business, I come across new stuff constantly, and Ashley is typically my first phone call. And over the last couple of years, I've provided Ashley with a lot of very unique situations where she had to say, "You just have to wait because I have to go find the answers."
Yeah, I mean, because sometimes, you know, you don't know the answer right off the bat. There are so many different scenarios for everything that we do that, you know, sometimes you're like, okay, let me do some fact gathering and then let me go back and let me see what, you know, how we're going to handle this. And, you know, on our last podcast, we dealt with death, and we said this was so morbid and next time we're going to be a little bit more upbeat. And guess what?
Today we're going to talk about divorce.
Yeah.
And divorce in the, just throw divorce in the mix of a real estate transaction, or worse, you're forced to have a real estate transaction because of a divorce. The heightened stress and emotion, I mean, it can be quite a nightmare.
It really, really can be so stressful for all parties. And I'm talking the buyer, the seller, you know, if the seller's...
And the real estate agent.
And the title company. I mean, it's just, it's hard.
It's super, super hard. And I found myself in the privilege or purgatory, I don't know, of having the unique opportunity to help quite a few people in this situation a few years ago, which Ashley and I still kind of laugh about because I didn't necessarily think that that would be my niche. However, I have a lot of patience, and I think that that's probably where people choose to work with me during these situations. But we thought, you know, because it is happening so often, and frankly, we saw a lot of it after COVID.
We did. But I'm still seeing a lot of it.
Yes, a lot of it. And it's probably all over the world. I mean, it's...
Right, it is.
But until you start to see it come across your desk more often, it feels like maybe it's only happening to you. So we thought that for anybody who is in the situation or thinking about the situation of getting a divorce, that we'll just throw out some information and then that people are armed with a little bit more knowledge.
Right. And then again, if you have questions, you can always Facebook us and we can come back, you know, and touch on whatever those questions would be.
Yeah.
So I think we should probably talk about it. You know, there's so many, like I said, so many different scenarios. So let's first talk about, hey, you know what? We are divorcing and we want to sell our house.
Yeah.
The divorce is not final.
Right.
Right? Because different scenarios create different ways that we handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not an attorney. I'm just going to tell you, you know, what questions I ask, how we handle it if, you know, we are in a divorce and we've just started the divorce, if we are in the divorce, we're almost divorced, or we're in the divorce and the judge has signed the final decree.
Okay.
Because all of that kind of looks a little bit different in our title world.
Yeah.
And, you know, that means if our title world looks different, that means it looks different to our sellers as well.
Correct.
Because we require them to do different things.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot of stuff. And I think a lot of people get very frustrated with the process per se. However, everything is put in place to protect people from what comes down the road, from making maybe a rash decision or making an uneducated, an uninformed decision.
Or being pressured into a decision
Correct.
That you don't want.
Correct. All of the above happen on a regular basis.
So the first scenario is, okay, I'm divorcing. My husband and I know that we're going to divorce, but we want to sell our house prior to filing for divorce. In that case, it's pretty much a normal
yeah.
transaction, other than we do have the heightened emotions. You know, okay, the seller, Mrs. wants to come at 9 and the Mr. wants to come at 4 because they don't want to run mm-hmm. into each other, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, our transaction does not look any different than a transaction for people who are not divorcing, because the courts have not been brought into it
Correct.
Yet.
Correct, yes.
Okay, and generally at this point, if they are have decided that they want to sell the house prior to, you know, filing, we don't have attorneys involved either.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's scenario number one.
Easiest.
Scenario number two is we have filed for divorce mm-hmm. and we have got a contract on our house, but we are not going to be able to finalize that divorce prior to the conveyance.
Yeah.
So that's where our transaction looks different. And it looks different because, like Ariel said, there's rules and regulations
mm-hmm.
that are put into place to
mm-hmm.
help protect everyone.
Yes. And I think more often than not, what we find in these scenarios is that even if it's an amicable situation and everybody's moving in the same direction, the attorneys will tell their clients, just sign this piece of paper that says you're fine with the divorce, or I don't want the proceeds, or any number of ways that it's going to be structured. But from a real estate standpoint, there are just some rules that have to be followed and some different paths that have to be taken, because it's not as cut and dry as, yeah, I'm okay with all of this. You got to make sure that something doesn't come back after
right.
the fact, because it has in the past, and now everybody has to do
right.
it differently.
Right.
Yeah.
The innocent are punished.
Uh-huh.
That's how I always feel.
Yes.
Okay, so we are in the middle of divorce. We have filed, but we haven't finalized. So if that is the case, then when the transaction is brought into us, the contract is brought in, we appreciate if someone in the transaction will tell us these people are in a divorce. We don't like to find that out at the closing table, because
this is a notice to all of you real estate agents out there that it's probably a good idea to tell the title company.
Yeah, I mean, periodically it does happen where we don't find out until so close to
yeah.
the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, then the bottom line is the transaction has to stop. We have to regroup, and that's not fun.
Well, finding that out on the schedule, is it the Schedule C that comes out on?
Well, so it just depends.
Yeah.
So generally, if somebody doesn't tell us at the beginning, sometimes we see the divorce filed of record, but those are done at the district clerk's office, not
yeah.
in the real property records. So it does get a little bit hairy. And
yeah.
then, you know, sometimes it's, oh, well, you know, they're divorcing. No, excuse me, back up. What? And then you're like, oh, I didn't know. I should have told you. Yes, that's something that we always like to know. Okay, so let's say that when the contract's brought in, mm-hmm. you know, the realtor says, here's the contract. Mr. and Mrs. Seller are divorcing. So we know that right off the bat. So when we get ready to do the title work, we look at the district clerk's office. We see, yes, there is a cause number, a divorce
mm-hmm.
decree that has been filed. It has not been finalized. So there are additional requirements that we put on our commitment.
Right.
The very first one is that we need an order from the judge authorizing this sale.
And aren't the standing orders, isn't that kind of a new thing with
Judge Cahoon. Judge, yeah. Yes, she put that in place. But that is not just Kendall County.
Right.
She put ours in place when she came in, but so many of the surrounding areas either have since put theirs in or prior to.
Well, and it's such a, I mean, it's a nice kind of fail safe.
It is, absolutely. And the whole idea of this is that the judge, it has to be run through the courts and get the approval that this property can be sold. That way, if somebody, either, you know, some of the attorneys involved, the judge, if they feel like somebody is being pressured, yes, or forced to sell the property, or are not getting fair representation in the whole thing, mm-hmm, it's a fail-safe, I, yeah, think, is what it is.
Yeah.
Do we get some pushback? Absolutely.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, what do we not get pushback on? Well,
especially when you don't divulge that the sellers are in the middle of a divorce, and the standing orders are standing in the way. Right, and they're standing in the way of closing, and then it becomes this
big
extra
deal.
Stress.
Yeah, you know, and everybody's like, oh, well, can we just, you know, can we do that after closing? No, we cannot.
Well, and then your buyers start to get worried that maybe something's going wrong with the transaction, and because...
And if you have a lender involved,
correct,
and now, you know, they've dated everything for, you know, tomorrow, and...
It's
not happening tomorrow. It doesn't happen that quick.
Yeah.
So, again, fail safe. We appreciate that. But if you are thinking about going through a divorce, or you are in the middle of a divorce and you've got a real estate transaction going, that is something that, you know, you need to keep in the back of your mind.
Well, and I know that as an agent, until you're faced with it, sometimes you don't know. So until I had a transaction where standing orders were required, I really didn't even know that that's what you had to do. I didn't anticipate it for my clients. So had I known at the beginning, it's probably a process we could have started. And had finished
right
before the ninth hour.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why if we know in the beginning, we make that requirement and then we start, you know, following up. Hey,
right,
has your attorney contacted the judge? Has the order, you know, request been submitted? Those kind of questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we should have named this podcast, You Don't Know What You Don't Know. Right?
You know what? There it is.
There it is again. Every time we talk about it like 10 times. Because
it's true.
You know, you're so right about the fact that if you had known,
right,
you could have been the driving force behind making sure all of that was on time or on target.
Well, and a lot of what we do in the real estate realm is just provide enough information for people to make the best decisions for themselves. And my clients didn't know that a standing order was required.
Right.
So
right,
we were all very much in the dark. And... I don't think it was new. I don't know. This was,
well, and you know, the
ago.
Thing is that if we do know when the contract comes in, then our commitment comes out and we make these requirements, right?
Right.
But that commitment doesn't come out for a week or two.
Right.
I mean, that's time that could have been used, you know, to start this process. Maybe,
yes,
not finish it, but to start it. Okay, so the first requirement, if we know that there's been a divorce and it has been filed of record but not completed, is that we've got to have the standing order from the judge,
yeah,
allowing the sale. The second thing is we need a disbursement authorization.
Mm-hmm.
A disbursement authorization is what Mr. and Mrs. Seller sign that say, hey, here is how much money I get. This is how we're,
right,
splitting it.
Yes.
And this gets a little bit complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Can,
yeah,
you imagine in a divorce? Okay. So sometimes there is, it's very straightforward. Hey, we're going to split this 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's not the case.
More often than not, it's not the case.
Right.
Yeah.
So sometimes the disbursement authorization has to say something like, okay, Mr. has been paying the mortgage and the taxes and all of this since they split a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now he needs to be reimbursed for those expenses along with the water heater repair.
Yeah.
And then after that, they're going to split.
And this is where, honestly, a really good title company becomes your best ally, because it can get so complicated. The numbers can make things so complicated.
They can. You know, but this is also where, if you have an agent who has done this before,
yeah,
and knows what's going on, number one, they know what the questions are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, they start preparing everybody for those questions. So,
right,
you know, I mean, we all know that this is a stressful situation.
Mm-hmm.
We already chatted about that. And if you can alleviate some of that stress by not springing this stuff,
yeah,
on them, you know, you start with the, oh, by the way, you know, if y'all have any invoices that we need to take care of, or,
right,
you know, as opposed to, you know, how do you want to split the proceeds knowing that we're going to have some conflict? Let's mitigate that conflict as much as we can.
Yes. It also helps too. I mean, everybody has different feelings about getting their realtor involved in certain ways, but it really helps to have an idea of what's going on from the attorneys so that you can communicate with them. These are things that will be required and will be needed. Let's help our clients understand what they're going to need to do to make this smooth once the property is under contract.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But when you surround yourself with professionals that you trust, you know, your attorney, your real estate agent, your title company, then, you know, we kind of all work together and make it as, I'm not going to say stress-free. That would definitely
it's
not be.
It's not.
There but is less yes, stressful. Less
that's the whole idea, is that this is a scenario where there's some acute stress in certain situations. And the goal is just to make this as simple and straightforward as we possibly can. I mean, selling a house is usually the catalyst to moving on. So, putting a financial strain in the middle of a divorce
is not fun.
It is not fun at all.
Not fun.
Not at all.
Okay. So I think we've covered if we have filed for divorce, but we haven't completed the divorce.
Yes.
So we've talked about, you know, that we're going to have additional requirements. We've talked about the stress. We've talked about, hey, if we can alleviate that and get on top of these things prior to the day before closing, it makes.
It happens.
It does happen. It makes everything so much easier.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about if we are divorced,
right?
And you know, one of the requirements of that divorce was that the family home be sold, and that this is what we're going to do with the proceeds. Okay, so if that's the case, then that divorce is what we're going to do. Okay, meaning we have to follow the terms and conditions of that divorce in order to complete the closing, split the proceeds, whatever it tells us to do. So how does that look for us? So the contract comes in, you know, we're told, okay, you know, they've divorced, they're required to sell this per the divorce decree. So first thing we do is we pull a copy of that divorce decree because we have to make sure that the terms and conditions are met. So we go through that divorce decree, and again, there's so many, many scenarios. So let's just start with a fairly straightforward scenario, okay? The divorce decree says that the house must be put up for sale, that the parties must agree on a realtor who's going to charge, you know, 6% total, 3 and 3, that once that happens, the wife is going to be refunded X dollars for the credit card payoff that she already has paid off, and he is going to be given, you know, 50% of the proceeds after that, and she'll get the other 50%. So that's pretty straightforward. So if that's the case, then our transaction, I mean, it looks pretty normal in everybody's eyes.
Well, and I will say some of it gets a little sticky when you're divorced, but say one spouse is still in the house until it sells. I think some people don't really realize that both spouses actually have to sign all of the documents pertaining to the transaction. And that's where I think from a real estate side of things, that's where it gets a little bit harder. It's almost easier if they're still married technically, because once they're divorced, they don't always want to agree.
Right.
And from the beginning, that's where it gets a little bit challenging, because both spouses, because they both still own the property despite being divorced, they have to sign everything.
Right. Because you cannot, well, we're going to talk about this, I bet, here in a minute. You cannot sign away your homestead rights in the state of Texas. And we'll talk about that. But right now I want to, you know, talk more about if you are selling after you have completed the divorce.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is, you know, sometimes it says that, you know, all the proceeds are going to the wife. And just like Ariel said, how much does that ex-husband want to come in here and sign when the...
He doesn't.
Yeah. Or, you know, the divorce decree does not cover some of the things.
Yeah.
There's been repairs that had to be made.
Or when your real estate agent tells you that in all likelihood you're going to need to do a price reduction because that's what the market is telling us, and one spouse is okay with it because they're ready to sell, and the other spouse is like, well, I like living here. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
It gets a little challenging.
It does. There's always something going in the background of all of these transactions.
Yeah.
So when I said that there's quite a few different options, let's say that sometimes we've talked about this before. You know, there are different attorneys that do different things.
Yeah.
So you've got family law attorneys, and they are the ones, you know, that generally handle the divorces and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then you have real estate attorneys. And sometimes you have somebody that does both, which is fabulous.
It's delightful. Because
it is delightful. It makes it so much easier because, so what happens sometimes is after the divorce is final, and in a case where, you know, one spouse gets the house,
yeah,
then the attorney will do a deed after the divorce decree is finalized. I would like to repeat that. After the divorce decree is finalized, they do a deed where whichever spouse does not get the house conveys their interest over to the other spouse, and they record it of record. So then when we go to do the title work, yes, these people just divorced. Yes, they, you know, are required to sell this property, but Mrs. gets all the proceeds, and Mr. has already deeded his half over to her. It's fabulous. How often does that happen? Not
in my life.
In my life, it happens every once in a while. And we're all so excited when it does.
We want to hug their necks.
Yes. Yes. But it does not always happen.
No.
Okay. So let's say that the divorce is final.
Okay.
And it has been 15 years. And the divorce decree said you got the house.
Yeah.
But there was no deed done.
Mm.
So people come and they're like, oh, you know what? We've been divorced for 15 years and nobody cares anymore. I don't even know where he is. He's in Timbuktu.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to sell this house. Okay, but not really. You're not going to, because he still has an interest in it.
Yes. Okay, so what do you do?
Okay, well, so we go all over the world trying to track these people down is what happens, because that spouse has to sign that deed. Or second option is we take the divorce decree from the district clerk's office, and we record it in the real property records, which is downstairs.
Yeah.
If that divorce decree has good enough information to show that the house was the wife's property. And when I say that, what do I mean? I mean, it can't just have, you know, 102 West Burbank. It has to have the address of the property and a good legal description. So on a side note, all property in the state of Texas is insured based on legal description, not 911 address.
Yeah.
That is because 911 addresses can change.
Yes. And I think that this is obviously we are sidebarring a little bit, but this is something that's very, very foreign to most people, the difference in a physical address versus a legal description.
Right. So we kind of touched on it previously. A legal description is lot and block.
Yeah.
If you're in a platted subdivision, and it's meets and bounds, which is 3.71 acres or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're in the country. So it has to have a good legal description. We record it in the real property records, and then that would get rid of the ex-spouse's interest in the property.
And that we do see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are some drawbacks. The fact that the whole divorce decree has to be recorded, so all your business is out there.
Yeah, it becomes public. Mm-hmm.
So when it's up in the district clerk's records, you know, you have to go up there. It's a little bit more of a process, and most people don't really even understand the process. So nobody's up there digging around. When it's real property records, I would say more people understand real property records and more people dig around in those. But it is what it is. If he's in Timbuktu or she's in Timbuktu, I mean,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But sometimes it doesn't matter anyway, because if the legal is not good, we cannot record it. And this is how we sometimes have to send people to prisons and to jails and to all over the country, searching out these people to get them to sign off on the documents.
If they, you know, left the country with their friends.
And I have actually had that. I had somebody that was in another country.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I've had somebody that was in a jail. I mean, really and truly, it's all sorts of crazy things happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Is it fun? No. Is it interesting? Absolutely.
Oh, the stories are fantastic.
Sorts of crazy things happen. Okay, so that is if the divorce is finalized and if the divorce is not finalized. We've kind of covered those two things.
Yeah. So one of the things, Ashley and I were talking about this, that happens quite a bit is the process of purchasing. So you're divorced and one spouse wants to purchase a property because they're selling the house, but they want to purchase the property prior to the divorce being final. And that's kind of a sticky situation because you're still legally married, which means your spouse that you're divorcing still has
interest
in the new property that you're buying, trying to technically buy by yourself. So this I see all the time, because one, it makes it very easy. If you know you're selling a house, there's enough money and everything so that one spouse can go buy another house. For all intents and purposes, we're going to make it easy on the kids. Right. We're not going to try to cohabitate in this house. The wife's going to go buy another house. What happens is that they don't realize that that husband is going to have interest in that new house, whether he's on, like, he's not getting a loan, he's not paying cash, nothing. But because you're still legally married, state of Texas, that's how it works. You can purchase a home without your spouse, but it gets sticky down the road in a couple years when she wants to sell it.
Right. Sell it, refinance it, any of those
things. Any of those things. That's where we put the full stop. We put the brakes on, because a lot of times too, the attorneys will say, we're going to have the husband sign all the documents that say he doesn't want any interest in this new house, but it doesn't really, it's not that simple. No. It doesn't really work that way.
No. And so often I have, you know, people, the guidance that people in the middle of a divorce are given is, oh yeah, you know, the husband can sign all these documents and it'll be fine. No, it's not going to be fine. And really, this goes back to like the 1800s and the old gambling laws in the state of Texas. And this is so your spouse could not gamble away the homestead, no joke. And those laws are still on the books, which means if you're married in the state of Texas, your husband or wife has interest in any property that you buy. Here's the next thing.
Yeah.
If you are in the middle of that divorce, the attorney can prepare a deed. The husband can sign that deed. You can file that deed. But if that divorce decree has not been finalized and the final orders have not been given, then it does no good. We, as a title company, do not see that as a viable document to convey any interest that the husband might have. Now, if he signs it 2 days after the divorce is final, more power to you. That's exactly what needs to happen.
Yeah.
He needs to sign it after the divorce is final. But like Ariel said, a lot of times, you know, the idea is let's make this easy on the kids.
Yes. Well, and I think most things it's let's make it easy on, let's make decisions that make it easy on all of us. But again, every person I've worked with that we've come into this scenario had no idea what the ripple effect could be down the road. They're just trying to make it easy on themselves.
Guess what? You don't know what you don't know.
It's true. You do not know what you don't know. Yeah.
So how do we get around that? There is really no getting around it as far as a document being signed and recorded unless the divorce decree is final. But what I have had happen several times throughout the years is where if you've got an attorney, you know, that is preparing the divorce and all of that, they can add that property in so that when the final divorce is done, it's already in the divorce decree that says that the wife gets this property and that the husband will sign a deed conveying it over. And then that deed, you know, that the attorney prepared can be executed and recorded, and then everything is just beautiful.
Yeah, and it works when it's amicable. It's when it's not amicable, and one spouse doesn't want to sign is when, that's when it gets a little hairy.
Right. And, you know, I know that we're sounding all, you know, like it's always doom and gloom, and I would say 99% of the time it really is. I don't know where I was going with that statement.
She was trying to find the positive and she couldn't.
Okay, I don't know what the positive is. I mean, sometimes we don't have any issues, but
I think with good communication and armed with the accurate information cuts 90% of our problems.
Yeah.
It's when you're blindsided. And especially when you're blindsided with a real estate issue in the middle of a divorce because everything is crazy anyway. It's just not fun. And again, providing as much information as you possibly can. And sometimes it is doom and gloom, but I can't tell you how many times I've been able to talk people through a scenario, but they had no idea.
Right.
Zero idea that a potential issue could be coming down the road. Or I will say too, if you can let people know ahead of time that something might become an issue, it immediately negates it as an issue.
Right.
They're like, oh, if that's a possibility, then at least we know it's coming down the pipeline.
Right.
And you know what to expect. It's the surprises.
Okay, so I just had a thought, because as soon as I have this conversation with people, the next question that they have is, I don't understand the whole homestead thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I want to just clarify that real quick, because to the general public, when you talk about homestead, the first thing that they think is the tax break they get at the tax office.
Right.
Hey, I live in this house and therefore I get $100,000 off the value for my school taxes. That is not the homestead that we are talking about. That is absolutely a homestead, but that is a designation that the tax office provides.
Mm-hmm.
This is your legit homestead, where you live, what you claim as your property. That is what ties back to those old laws,
yeah.
Not the tax office homestead where you get, you know, a valuation on your taxes. So
right.
Just for clarification on that.
Well, and we could really get you, like, we could really bore you with the whole, you know, equitable title, legal title, all of those sorts of differences. But I think homestead is the easiest way to wrap that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we talked about, I touched briefly on the fact that, you know, it does not matter how long the divorce has been, you know, how long the spouse has been gone, how long ago the divorce happened, that it does not negate if the spouse has interest out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often, you know, when you tell people that, and this is something that the agent most often has no idea. So what happens is we get a contract and it is, you know, whoever,
yeah.
A woman, let's just say it's a woman by herself. And that is the only person the agent has talked to. That is the only person she's dealt with. She's known this woman for 15 years.
Yep.
She's never had a husband, blah, blah, blah. Right? And then we do our title work, and guess what? We see a man and a woman in title.
Yeah.
Well, so first thing we have to ask is, when did you divorce?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then when she says, oh, we bought this house and then we divorced, okay, let's look. Is that divorce decree something that we can record of record, or are we going to have to get a deed from him? So that does create stress, because, you know, the agent doesn't even know to ask about this spouse.
No.
Because he's been out of the picture for so long.
Yeah. Well, and some people don't want to talk about him.
Right. Right. Gone and forgotten.
Please.
It's done. Yeah. So, I mean, that always comes as a little bit of a shock. And then to have to, you know, tell them, no, I understand that you haven't spoken to him in 25 years, but that does not negate the fact that he's got interest in this property.
Well, and you said that, it made me think, when I first got into this business, somebody was explaining to me the privilege that it is to be a real estate agent for somebody, because you become privy to information that family members don't get. Pastors of your church, you're not going to tell anybody any of this, but because the nature of real estate, sometimes you got to tell your agent what's going on so that they know how to help you.
Yeah.
And you take that privilege pretty darn serious.
Yeah.
Because it's true.
Like, yeah. I mean, you know, I always say in the closing room that I hear things, I have a box of tissues, because you never, ever know what's going to happen.
Ever.
So, I don't know, last year sometime I was doing a closing, and one of the documents is a marital status affidavit. This is how
yeah.
we ferret out this information, right? And so on there, the wife had her name and then a whole bunch of other last names, right? Well, she's sitting next to the husband, so I slide that document over, and the husband sees it, and he came unglued.
Oh, no.
He was like, you told me you weren't married to him, and... ensued. And her response was, we were only married for 2 weeks. It didn't count.
Oh, no.
Like, wow. So there are ways that we ferret out this information. So if somebody thinks, ooh, I'm just going to not mention that spouse, inevitably we figure it out.
Yes.
So.
And really, the heart of all of this is to make sure that you own the property that you think you own.
Right. Right.
And that no one else can come back and say, I'm so sorry, but I have an interest in this property. It's a big deal. I mean,
yeah.
I'm sure every state does take this seriously. I only practice in the state of Texas.
Myself.
Yes. So, I mean, the state of Texas takes this very, very,
very, very
seriously.
Very seriously. Okay, so we've talked about divorce is final, divorce isn't final. We've covered all of that. Now, you made a point that I would like to come back to.
Okay.
Where we want to make this easy on everybody.
Yeah.
So let's say that the wife is going to stay in the house.
Okay.
But the husband really does get half of the proceeds. What happens then? So we're not going to sell the house. So in this case, I know a real estate agent wouldn't be involved, but I want to throw this out there because I feel like most people have never even heard how this works, and they've never even heard the term oilty.
I had not heard this term until last week.
When we started talking about this.
Yes, I can't even say the word.
So let's talk about it for just a second. So if you have a husband and a wife that live in a home and it is their homestead, they decide they're going to divorce and they want to split the proceeds of the house.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, let's say they've got young kids, whatever, the wife wants to stay in the home.
Mm-hmm.
She can afford the home. She's going to continue to live there. She's going to make the full mortgage payments and she's going to raise the kids there. And the husband is going to be the one that leaves. Okay, if that is the case and she doesn't have, let's say that this is a $600,000 home,
mm-hmm.
which means, you know, you get an appraisal, it comes out $600,000. If they were going to sell it, that's what they would market it for. So the husband gets $300,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So if that is the case and she doesn't happen to have $300,000 lying around to, you know, to give him,
yeah.
to buy his interest out, there is a way in the state of Texas that this can happen and her retain her homestead and convey out his. Okay, so here's how it works. The attorneys would absolutely be involved in this, and within the divorce decree, they would create what is called an oilty lien. This is a lien that is only used for this exact scenario.
Yes.
It is when a spouse is purchasing homestead interest from another spouse. Okay, so the lien is created within the divorce decree, and it says, okay, Joe Blow, Mr. Seller, gets $300,000. So that allows Mrs. Seller to go in and refinance and get him off of her note and deed of trust,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And pull that equity out of the homestead,
mm-hmm.
and pay him off. So remember in one podcast, we did home equities and home equity
right.
lines of credit. So if that is not something that you want to do, I mean, lots of people don't want to pull equity out like that and have an actual home equity.
Yeah.
This is another option, mm-hmm. for you to be able to do a straight refinance,
mm-hmm.
because the lien that is created within the divorce decree is shown on our commitment as a lien that is refinanceable.
Mm.
Okay. So you would have, let's say that they owe $100,000 to Chase,
mm-hmm.
and then she owes $300,000 to Mr. X.
Mm-hmm.
So that means she's got $400,000 worth of lien out there that she can refinance.
Mm-hmm.
So she would go to, you know, Wells Fargo or whoever and say, okay, I want to refinance this $400,000 worth of lien,
mm-hmm.
and I want to do a straight refinance. Because now she's not pulling any equity out of her homestead because she is buying out her.
It's genius.
Yes, yes. And it can only be used for oilty lien situation, which
gotcha.
Is purchasing homestead from a spouse.
Gotcha. And for those of you that are new to this word, it's oilty, OWELTY, if you want to go check it out, because I had to.
Yeah.
Once Ashley popped this one on me.
Well, so it's funny because in almost all of what I call standard deeds of trust, like the ones that at the bottom say this is a standard form, that's a pretty good clue that they're standard.
Yeah.
Those documents within the body of the document talks about the different types of liens.
Yes, and it will put you to sleep fast.
Absolutely it will. But one of them is oilty.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you've got your regular purchase money, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all sorts of options, but one of them is oilty. So every once in a while, if somebody's flipping through, they'll ask me, what's an oilty lien? Which I don't even know how they pronounce it.
Well, I can't pronounce it. It's not funny. But I will have to say in the 30 or 40 transactions I've had dealing with divorcing people, oilty liens never came into the conversation. And I'm wondering if they didn't know about them.
Yeah,
I didn't know about
not.
Them. Nobody, none of the attorneys talked to them about it.
I think that generally, I guess it is the attorneys, or it is, you know, Mrs. Seller calling her, you know, company, her lender and saying, you know, hey, this is what I want to get my ex-husband, soon to be ex-husband, off of the title, you know, or off my note and deed of trust. How do I do that? And maybe they suggest it. I really don't
know. It wouldn't
know.
Surprise me if some of them don't really know about this. If you haven't been in the business
yeah.
very long, or it's just not crossed your desk, who knows? Who knows? But I think it's a wonderful tool that can be used a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe it is used a lot. I just hadn't come across it.
Surprisingly, it's not used as often as you would think. But more often than not, that home, they want to sell.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, that goes back to the emotions and everything yes. that's happening.
Yes.
You know, within the transaction. So,
well, and financially, it's not always viable.
Right.
To keep that house and move on to something else. So right. that's probably majority of the time
right. it needs to happen. But does it happen? Yes. I mean, I do two or three year, probably maybe two a year. I mean, enough that it's something that,
well, again, this became something else that I have in my toolbox right. to talk to people about. It may not be applicable, but again, you don't know what you don't know.
I love it.
I know.
Yeah, you don't know.
And we are probably
know.
Renaming our podcast.
Exactly.
Well, actually, I think we've covered quite a bit with all of this.
I think so too.
Clearly, this is a subject that comes up enough. We could talk about this for a long time. And
absolutely. And again, yeah. you know, the emotion that goes through, you know, all of these transactions, it makes it difficult for all parties. But
yes.
if you have somebody that has done it before, knows what they're doing, can prepare everybody for the pitfalls that are ahead, because inevitably there are.
Oh, the messy middle can right. be so messy. And I mean, you just got to do the best you can do, and it's a tough situation, but I think having a good team of people around you
yeah.
definitely make it easier.
Yeah. And just knowing, you know, this could come up, that could come up. I mm-hmm. mean, and it's not our job to scare anybody. Our job is to make this as painless as possible.
Yes.
And the way that you do that is to not have big, fat surprises.
Well, and I can't tell you how many times it would have been a whole lot easier had somebody just contacted the title company first to find out what's on my books now. What do I need to have on my books to get this done?
Yeah.
I don't think people, I think that's maybe an undervalued aspect yeah. of title companies, is just they're here to help. So
yes.
give them a call.
Because really and truly, we all have one goal, and that is to yes. get the transaction closed
yes.
and for there to be as least bloodshed as possible. So, you know, if we are asked questions in advance, we can give you answers. We
yes.
can help, you know, avoid some of the things like not knowing about the order. I mean, because inevitably
yes.
that is, well, his attorney should do it. No, her attorney should
right.
do it. Okay, guys. Y'all can fight all day long, but somebody's attorney has to do it. So, you know, if we all lead in with the fact, oh, by the way, it's easier if it's a, oh, by the way, we're probably going to need this, as opposed
yes.
to we need this done and we needed it done yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
That creates more stress.
Fire sales are no fun at the end.
No.
Wow.
Okay. So.
Again, if anybody has any questions, obviously we are not lenders, attorneys, financial advisors by any means. However, we do know the people who are and can put you in touch with somebody if you have additional questions. You can DM us at the closing table on Facebook. We also have an email address. It's closingtable@gmail.com if you want to send something there. We are terribly grateful to Reggie Rocks Kendall County for hosting us. We hope they keep hosting us after all the doom and gloom podcasts we keep putting out.
Maybe we should promise that next one is going to be more upbeat.
If you'd like to know more. But yes, Reggae Rocks Kendall County has an app, and they house our previous episodes and episodes of other podcasts. So feel free to head that direction if you'd like to hear something that we've done previously. We hope you'll keep tuning in, and thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll catch you next time.